This is Museum People, a podcast that celebrates individuals connected with the museum field by highlighting their work, passions, opinions, and personalities. In each episode, you'll hear stories and viewpoints from a variety of museum people, unsung workers to executive directors, volunteers to trustees, as they help change the world one visitor at a time. And now, the hosts of Museum People, Dan Yeager and Marika Van Dam.
At the outset of episode 4 of the Museum People podcast, Marika, I'm thinking about the question of value in museums.
It's a good question. It's one we think of every time we ask people for money. Have I convinced my donors that they should give to me?
I've been thinking slightly more globally. This past year, we've seen a lot of images of terrorists smashing up antiquities with sledgehammers and bulldozers and the like. And I thought to myself at the time, what does that say about the value of culture? Does that make it priceless because they are using this action as sort of a terrorist statement? Or does it make us value less because those items mean so little to them that they are willing to smash them up? And it's something I don't have an answer for, but is it priceless or is it valueless? And then I hear about all of the different political winds that blow, and museums, culture, arts always seem to be held as a political football for some reason. We're very quickly defunded or underfunded and the like. And it raises that question, if we're a political football, does that make us really valuable or valueless? It's perplexing.
It's a tough question, Dan, and I think that we do have, museums have an incredible value, culture has a value. And when they, studies have shown that if you want to destroy people during an attack, if you want to hurt a community of people, you hurt their treasures and their culture. So that's why these antiquities are getting destroyed, is because they represent something. When I think about making a case for my own organization for history in general, I think people want to know, people want to be cemented to a place. They want to feel like they are part of something greater. And when you destroy culture or you don't give people access to that culture, it's debilitating and it hurts you. It hurts you mentally and it breaks something in a group of people in a community.
Yeah. Spiritually, psychically, absolutely. The whole nine yards. This is, in a way, a sad day because this is the final question of Marika's patented person on the street interviews at the Massachusetts State House. We asked one last question about what is the value of museums.
What value do you provide to the community?
In 25 words or less. It's important to preserve history, what other people have done. It's interesting, just that's what got me into it. I like the stories. But it shows what people have done, are capable of doing, things they shouldn't have done, and it's a warning not to do it again.
If museums disappeared, how would the world be different?
That's a tough one. I think that other organizations would be scrambling to fill the kind of cultural and social void that museums would leave, but other types of organization wouldn't necessarily be able to do what museums do. The combination of expertise and collections and educational expertise, museums are really unique, and so I don't think the substitutes would ever really do it.
If museums disappeared, how would the world be different?
Yeah, did you see my eyes just widen?
What is the value of appreciating history in a community?
Oh, that's a great question. It's important. It keeps your community alive. I think it forms a connector between you and maybe people that you didn't necessarily think you had common ground with. Neighbors, friends, schools, anyone, you know, if you have something that you can talk about, it's nice to know that people around you, you know, also have that information. So it's important. That's what museums are here for. They're good for interacting and socializing.
What value do you provide to the community?
There are a lot of values to Plymouth Plantation. We're a community hearth in many ways, a place that people can come not only to learn about this founding story of our country, but people come for all sorts of reasons. People come for their weddings. They come to shop for Christmas gifts. They come to go to the movies. We have a cinema. So we're a We like to be a community hearth and a community hub in a way that's unexpected.
How do museums make us better people?
I think anything that makes you reflect. And our museum particularly, you can look at choices that have been made in the past and be informed. It always informs current choices and current decisions and current ways that we view ourselves and current ways that we view other people. So looking at old stories, looking at old paintings, looking at scientific processes even, all of these museums that are here, there are things that people can go to these museums and use to reflect on themselves and on our current world and be a better citizen of our current world.
Why do you think museums matter to a community?
Well, I believe that they're a place that people gather to see what they're all about. You know, it represents them. And it also represents the things that their parents were about and their grandparents were about. And that's very important to people, to understand where they came from.
If museums ceased to exist, how would that change your community? How would that change the world?
I think there would be a sadness if museums ceased to exist. I personally don't have a lot of objects from my ancestors, and I feel that void. It's a palpable void. It's a sadness. And so I think that people take for granted the joy that museums bring into their lives. And if they suddenly were wiped off the face of the earth, that hole would leave a piercing pain in their heart. But I'm also biased.
Marika, the value of museums. What did you hear?
What I actually heard in Vicky from Plymouth Plantation is something that we heard last podcast from Bob about museums turning into cultural centers. And I love that.
Yeah, the hearth.
The hearth. I love right? that analogy. Yeah. I think it makes complete sense. And if we all thought of our museums and the services that we provide to our people, to our community, to our audiences as this warmth and this glow, that's a huge value.
Yeah.
And when you don't have that, there's a loss, like a fire going out. It makes you think about what would fill that void, because you'd have to fill that void. You wouldn't want to live in a place where there was a void of culture.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of optimism, I think, in our field about what we provide. Maybe it's fair to say we don't have all the greatest tools to articulate that sometimes, and that's maybe something that we're evolving and learning, but a great optimism about what we're all worth.
The passion is there.
Yeah. So our interview subject today is Jessica Beitley, who is the Director of Preservation Services at the Northeast Document Conservation Center, NEDCC as it's known. And Jessica, I believe, brings a lot of perspectives to the conversation because she's not in a museum. She works with museums to help them think about the question of preservation and how it is important to their particular institutions. Jessica Beitley.
I'm Jessica Beitley. I'm the Director of Preservation Services at the Northeast Document Conservation Center, NEDCC, in Andover, Massachusetts. As part of Preservation Services, we do largely the outreach and education for the center. So our role in the mission is to provide access to preservation information that may not be available to people working in very small or mid-sized organizations that don't have the resources to go to conferences and necessarily keep up to date with everything that's going on in preservation. To share that information, we have a number of different services. We offer a 24-hour disaster hotline, so somebody on my staff is always available to answer disaster calls.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that you too, sometimes?
I have the phone right now.
Really?
Wow. I usually try to avoid having the phone. But
sounds very stressful.
It's... You know, the biggest stress is that we have a flip phone, and I don't know how to use it anymore. So, yeah, we don't get a ton of calls, maybe a couple a month, but you know, it's really whatever you define as a disaster, right? I can't tell you what is a disaster to you.
So, what are the calls usually like?
Unfortunately, almost always, we had a pipe burst 3 months ago, and now we're dealing with it. So it's largely helping people stay calm and know that there are things that they can do to take care of their collections, even if it's been a while or, you know, they had a fire, they had a flood. Just making it seem like an approachable and surmountable issue.
And what kind of institutions are calling you? Is this museums, libraries?
Everybody. Museums, libraries, archives, art galleries, individuals. It's open to anybody who is interested. Aside from disaster response, we also do technical inquiries to anybody outside of the department. It's just like preservation questions, which anybody can ask. Again, you know.
So you're just kind of serving the field.
Yeah, and that's not awesome. Even just the field, individuals too. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be that you're working in a historical society or you're working in a museum. You can be, you know, Joe Schmo from Oklahoma City who had one gentleman was burying money in his backyard.
Burying money.
He was burying PVC tubes of money in his backyard.
Everybody does that, right?
So he apparently had $4,200 that he had gotten wet. And he called and we started talking to him about, okay, here are things that you might try to get these items unstuck and to get the mold off of them so that they remain viable currency. People's preservation questions sort of span the gamut of what you could potentially imagine.
So how did the guy from Oklahoma hear about you?
I think he probably Googled moldy paper, is what I suspect. I didn't actually ask him, and that's probably something we should start asking people.
You operate in a very large universe of types of institutions. Are you seeing any particular trends of preservation needs and so forth that are emerging within any of these areas?
I think one of the big things that's been coming up a lot, what provides the broadest benefit to all collections held by an institution. We happen to specialize in paper materials. But really the thing that provides the broadest benefit is taking care of your building and taking care of your environmental control system. So directing those resources in a way that is most efficient and provides the best benefit and the best bang for your buck is what we try to help people with.
Yeah. Have you had any specific success stories?
We've had some really good success with a number of institutions. My personal favorite is with an institution in Florida. And they had some documents that were potentially going to be donated to them. The donor had concerns about the space that they would be moving into. So he wanted, it was actually a donor-driven preservation assessment. They couldn't get these materials that were key to telling the history of their area unless they improved their preservation practices.
Wow.
And so I went there and I visited them and we spent 2 days, actually, which is a long preservation assessment. They have amazing materials. They have Hemingway's biology notebook with his drawings of grasshoppers.
Cool.
Yeah, they have really cool stuff. But yeah, so they had a preservation assessment. I was there for a few days, and then I wrote my report. And based on their report, they were able to go to their town and say, look, we do actually need to have somebody come in and do this work. So they ended up hiring an archivist to sort of get their collections in order. And based on the work that they did to improve their general preservation outlook, the donor said, you know what? I am prepared to give you these materials. So they received a donation that was important to them. And they also were able then to pursue conservation work on some of their more damaged materials that had high value. I'm actually getting teary about this. It's really exciting to be able to go to a place and know that you have helped them move forward with the kinds of things that they already know they need to do, but it's their opportunity to really say, this is really stuff that we need to do. But it's not always that we get to see the process from beginning to end. So when they do report back and say, look, we've done this and we've done this and we've also been able to do these things, and it's really largely based on the fact that you guys came by, it's really heartening.
Yeah, well, so, you're making a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, what you do makes a big difference, right?
Yeah, it feel, right. It's, it, yeah. That's when it feels like it's making a big, yeah. big difference.
Tell me, how did you get into this work?
Do you want the real answer or the...
Of course. Yeah. Our listeners want to know.
I went to library school after working in a couple of museums in Pittsburgh. I was doing that. I was also working in a hair salon as a salon manager. Got to know one of our clients, and eventually I came to Boston. I was going through grad school. It's a hard market here, and a couple of jobs opened up in Pittsburgh again. So I went and interviewed, and one of them happened to be with the person who was a client at the hair salon.
Hmm.
And he was like, "You're a metadata librarian. We need metadata." And that job is a part of a audiovisual preservation organization. So I didn't intend to get into preservation at all. I intended to be an archivist. And it turns out I really like the working at that organization and then working at NEDCC. We're both very outward-facing organizations and very invested in meeting people and working with them and seeing what their collections are and what can be done to sort of lift up their preservation prospects. So yeah, when a job opened at NEDCC, I applied and came in and interviewed, and my AV experience that was sort of serendipitous happened to coincide with some work that they were planning to do at NEDCC, and then I've been here for 3 years now.
So your advice to people following in your footsteps to get a job in this field is to what? Also get a job at a hair salon that happens
yes.
to have...
No, I mean, I think the advice, like the actual advice there is just being willing to talk to people and being open and being willing to make sometimes fairly drastic changes in your life and try different things and see what really sticks.
The thing I took away with Jessica's interview is she's got a lot of passion for something that's very behind the scenes. That's why I thought the question about her perspective on some of the things that are happening, and it's not just with museums, that's the thing. I love the anecdote about the individual from Oklahoma City burying money. People do the darndest things, don't they?
If we all got together and shared these stories, wouldn't it be great if we had fun stories like Jessica told and we could really present those? This is an actual value that we can provide to the public.
Yeah. Well, speaking of value and looping it back to the question at the beginning of the episode, I thought that what she talked about in terms of preservation really did speak to that question about value in many, many ways. And she was indicating that the real value that people need to be focused on in terms of preservation is really on their building and on their systems so that the things that are in them are safe. It goes to, again, that value of what's of value to your institution and how do you preserve it, how do you protect it. And I think they do a great job in terms of literally giving anybody that calls an idea of what they can be doing better.
I think they're going to get a lot more phone calls now that you know that you may get Jessica on the other line.
Maybe they can upgrade from their flip phone now. All right. That's it for episode 4. As usual, we want to encourage you to listen to us and every episode. And, of course, talk back to us. Let us know how we're doing. Hashtag Museum People.
I think that
Twitter.
We are also accepting ideas for future interviews
right. And
future subjects. So if you have an idea, please do not hesitate. The window is still open to send us your ideas.
Absolutely. Thanks.
So long.
Next time on Museum People.
My first museum memory is from Central California at a living history museum where my dad traded me for a metal axe.
We helped these guys go down into the tide pool, and it was just the coolest experience. It just made us feel so special, and it's something that stuck with me my entire life.
I always want to go with my friends when they have babies, and I want to be there for their first museum experience.
Museum People is a production of the New England Museum Association, which connects, inspires, and empowers cultural institutions to provide their communities with deep and authentic experiences. Have an idea or comment for Museum People? Go to nemanet.org/museumpeople to provide feedback, get information about episodes, and learn how to subscribe. Thanks for listening.